You're listening to Sweat, Snot and Tears, brought to you by NetMums. I'm Annie O'Leary.
And I'm Wendy Gollidge. And together we talk about all of this week's sweaty, snotty and tearful parenting moments.
With guests who are far more interesting than we are.
On this week's show...
For children that are dyslexic, it just feels to them that there's a whole world that isn't open to them. Like, just don't give up. Just be persistent. Do the things that you enjoy doing. Find that book that really sets your imagination going. And, you know, there are ways to do things. I mean, I think throughout my whole life, I've been trying to find ways to do things that I shouldn't really be able to do.
But before all of that, welcome to another episode of Sweat, Snot and Tears. I hope you are all right. I'm in the office today, which feels very retro, very 2019. I hope you're all somewhere gorgeous and inspiring and beautiful and warm and cosy and all the lovely words. Wendell, I can see you are in your dining room as per. What's going on in Wendell world?
Well, the sun's out, which is pretty cool. It feels like actual spring is actually coming. And I'm a little bit proud of the biggest small this morning.
Come on, share.
We're recording on Red Nose Day today, and the school is actually raising money for children in the Ukraine. And my little 10-year-old has spent the last 3 weeks diligently making bookmarks out of aqua beads, which she is selling at school for children in the Ukraine. And they're super cute. They're like little pumpkins and toadstools and things. So proud mum moment. I'm feeling very, very proud of her.
As you should. Now, it's interesting that you raise the 10-year-old here, because today I can let you all know that we are hated by our 10-year-olds as they desperately wanted to kick us aside and interview today's guest. Her books are beloved by children that age everywhere. Welcome, Liz. Do we say Pichon? Pichon?
It's Pichon.
Pichon, very posh.
It's very French.
It is French. It's Monsieur Pichon, way, way, way back. It's like my on my dad's side, like some sort of great, great, great grandpa. But I don't speak French. And when I was at school, I had to suffer the Pichon, Pichon, pea shooter, pick on, you name it. Whenever a teacher or somebody started, you know, like not knowing what the surname was, I knew it was always mine.
But is that why you gave the character you're most famous for, Tom Gates, a very easy to pronounce, easy to understand name?
I wasn't quite that thoughtful about it, to be honest.
You sound like our kind of gal.
Yeah, it's very much like, you know, you just draw lots of characters. You know, kids often ask me why, you know, why the character's called that and why it's a boy and not a girl and that kind of thing. And it was really, you know, when you're writing a story, because it did take me a long time to come up with the idea. I've been sort of percolating it for a long time. And I just did lots and lots of drawings. And then this character kept being drawn and kept popping up. And then when you look at him, you just think he just looks like a Tom. And I just wanted a sort of short, snappy name.
So take us back for a minute. Tell us, any sweat, snot or tears in the house that you're in this morning?
No, this is our grown-up house.
You lucky bugger.
Have a grown-up house and a child house? Explain.
So I'm in Mallorca at the moment, and I discovered that actually, not having ever written anything very much before I did Tom Gates, I'd done picture books. In order to get the work done in the writing, I started having to sort of go away. I mean, I had to lock myself away or go away, and I would finally like go to a hotel or something and just try and zone in to what I was doing, because I had so many deadlines. And so really luckily, like 5 years ago, we decided we'd actually get somewhere to go. And Mark and I suddenly realised it's the first time ever in our lives, we've been married for 32 years in April, that we could actually put things in the house from scratch, you know, like put things in that we liked. And so this is what I call our grown-up house. It's totally, you know, if we ever had any young children or small kids in this house, like nothing would survive. It's got glass bottles everywhere, sharp corners, glass bottles, you know, lights, fairy lights. It's got all the open staircase, you know, the lot. Everything that you just wouldn't have if you had small children, this place has it.
So how old are your kids now?
My son's 31, just turned 31 in...
You don't look old enough to have a 31-year-old.
Yeah, it's nice lighting, ladies. Yeah, my son's 31, just gone March, just passed. My daughter's 27 and my youngest is 22.
So hang on, were your kids, when you started writing Tom, were your kids older? Because Imagine what it's going to be like when you've got kind of like 9-year-old grandchildren and granny writes Tom Gates. How cool is that going
to
be?
Do you know, I can't even think that far ahead. I'm so lucky to have children, but it was never really part, you know, I never really thought about it. I had friends that sort of thought about having kids and that, and it never really wasn't like a conscious decision. So it's been, so my kids were, when Tom Gates first came out, my daughter was 12. And, you know, and actually, I think looking back, it probably happened at a really good time for me. I mean, I did pitch books and juggled furiously when they were younger, you know, writing and doing things. But when Tom Gates happened, I don't think I would have been able to do as much. It really happened at the right time. I was able to sort of throw myself into it a lot more. And also, you know, doing, you know, more things like the traveling and stuff like that was a lot easier because they were older.
It's only in researching this that I found out that you've got a podcast as well.
I do, yeah. Actually, we started doing it last year. It's called 10 Tremendous Tales of Liz Pugin. I had to remember it then. And it's basically, I meet lots of really interesting people. And I wanted to get them to talk about, you know, something that's happened in their lives. One of the things when I talk to kids, they're always really, you know, they always wonder how you make that jump. Like, how do you do what you do? Yeah, and so much of what I write about happened were stories and things that happened to me when I was younger, or things that happened to you, that, you know, your failures, you know, things that have happened, stories at school, all that kind of thing. So it's lots of really interesting people talking about their tremendous tales, like how they started, something that happened to them. Snacks feature quite a lot. If you're a writer, you have to keep yourself going with lots of snacks. And in the book, Tom's very keen on the snack. So we talk about their favourite snack, how to eat it. And then they tell a tremendous fail as well. So something that they've done that hasn't quite worked out, so they can tell us, you know, how that's, what's happened to them. And also I give them a shameless plug. So they're allowed to, rather than that awkward situation in interviews where you have to try and shoehorn in literally your sort of latest book or anything, we give over to them as much time as they want to talk about whatever project it is. So it's their shameless plug.
Well, should we do that? Liz, your shameless plug.
So I've got a book coming out at the end of March. 10 Tremendous Tales is out in paperback. And I've got a book at the moment called You Can Draw Tom Gates with Liz Pichon. And it's like an activity book. So it's got I've put loads of things in there, how to draw some of the characters, how to do the fonts, little tips and tricks, how to draw on things. So if you've got kids that are really interested in activities and making things, and you don't have to be, you know, brilliant at drawing. That's the great thing about this style that I've done. You know, kids can really get into it and enjoy it. So that's coming out in March. The TV show, got series 2, which is out at the moment as well. I'll be here for ages now.
So exciting.
I was just going to say, when you start, because you started out as an illustrator, didn't you? And then you moved into writing.
I did, yeah. I was trained, that's very loose there, as a graphic designer. You know, I wanted to do illustration, but my tutors at college sort of there was a tumbleweed moment when I said, oh, I'd like to do illustration. And they all looked at me and went, no, we think you should do graphics. And actually, it was useful learning about, you know, typesetting and layouts and things like that for the book world. But I kind of rebelled in my own small way. And every graphic project I got, I used to try and do it in an illustrative way. But yeah, so I did graphic design, and my first job that I got, I mean, I did lots of other things in between, but the first kind of like real job I had was working for what I thought was going to be very glamorous, working for a record label. So I designed album covers.
Sounds super glam.
Tell us some records that you designed for.
I thought this was going to be like, you know, really exciting and amazing. And I got the job, and then it was a company called Jive Records, which used to have like several different companies. And they had a recording studio across the road. It's based in Willesden. And it's really weird, actually, because I went to school in Kilburn. And when I was a kid, and I used to go to, they used to take us to a sports field quite a long way on the coach. We used to drive past this building in Willesden High Road. And I remember looking at it as a kid thinking, what is that building? What is it? It had these tiny little windows, which obviously had album covers in it. And then later on, I discovered that it's a record label. And that's where I was working. So I recognised it from when I was a kid. And I thought, oh, yeah, this is going to be very glamorous. Had the interview. There was all these gold discs everywhere. And then when I actually got the job, what they didn't tell me was the art department was just me and this other guy called Jonathan. And they took me downstairs, out of the building, past the bins, and into a porter cabin.
No.
Yep. Oh. And so that was me. And that was in the days when, you know, people could smoke. So Jonathan used to smoke as well. And I'd be like in a cloud of smoke in a porter cabin, like trying to do all this work. And then they decided to expand the department. And one day a great big crane came along and they put another porter cabin on the top. So that was my start. So it was amazing, though, because, you know, we just got to do everything. I had no idea what I was doing, like a lot of people when you first start out. I just kind of, you know, I didn't really know anything about how to do proper artwork. It used to take me ages as well. I mean, there weren't any computers or anything. So you used to have to do everything by hand with lots of cow gum and sticking and ordering bits of text and things. So I kind of learned on the job, but it meant I got to work with artists. I had to do the album design. I had to go to the photo sessions, organize, you know, the photo shoots, hairdressers, stylists, everything.
Who did you do? Which albums?
I was really fortunate. I got to work with Billy Ocean a couple of times.
God, I love Billy Ocean.
He was so lovely. And I also worked with Ruby Turner. So I did one of her album covers. Jive Records used to have, they were incredibly cool in America. They used to have sort of LL Cool J and Cool Moe Dee and all these other sort of rap acts. But we never did any of those artists. The Americans already had their own album covers. But we did have Silvertone was part of Zomba Records and they were the Stone Roses. They did their albums, which I never got to do because they always used to do their own covers. So it was a bit of a mad time. And I think looking back, I also realised very quickly that, you know, I wanted to do more of my own work. I wasn't really getting much of my own illustration work done. So I used to design the covers for Chapel Music and Bruton Music, who were library music companies within Jive Records. And nobody was interested in doing those because they didn't get put out. They weren't sold. So I used to do all those album covers, like classical music covers and things, and just do my illustrations and collages.
Now, how does an illustrator who's doing album covers and is dyslexic become a children's book writer?
After I worked at Jive, some of my illustrations got used on products, on T-shirts and things like that for merchandise. And then I started to do greeting cards. So I took a portfolio of work. There's a fair up in Birmingham every year called the Spring Fair. And I remember like lots of illustrators, you'd spot each other. You'd all be walking around desperate with your portfolio, desperately trying to show people some work. And I got some work for a greeting card company. So I started doing sort of cats and dogs and, you know, some of them were quite successful. And that's when publishers and people started to see my animals and creatures. And I started to get asked to illustrate other people's books and other people's stories. So, you know, I mean, I had no idea about how to illustrate a book. But, you know, after when you've done a few of them and you kind of get that rhythm and you realize how much work and how long it takes to do a picture book. You know, they're so labor intensive. They're like the really good ones. So I sort of learned on the job a bit about how, you know, what kind of books. And then you start to think, you know what, if I write my own stories, then I won't have to wait for somebody to give me a job. You know, and I was illustrating for, I did Enid Blyton's Bible stories once.
Right.
I mean, I'd take anything. You know, I would look at jobs that would come in and sort of say, if I do that job, then that's my, you know, the mortgage or that's a bill. And so I wasn't really thinking about what kind of books that I actually really wanted to do. I was just doing whatever, you know, as a freelancer, whatever comes my way, I was just having a go.
So if you were going to give advice to, if there are any dyslexic children listening now, with your experience, what would you say to them? What advice would you give them?
I would say, I mean, somehow I've managed to make what I loved doing as a kid, everything I'm doing now, I mean, literally everything, making things, drawing, doing that, I've managed to end up making a living from it somehow. And I'd say for kids that are dyslexic, like, just don't give up. Just be persistent. Do the things that you enjoy doing. Find that book that really, you know, sets your imagination going. And, you know, there are ways to do things. I mean, I think throughout my whole life, I've been trying to find ways to do things that I shouldn't really be able to do. You know, I mean, I'm still terrible at spelling. I'm still terrible at, you know, like I look back at some of the emails I send and it's like, oh God, that went a bit quick. Tweeting is like a nightmare. Trying to check my spelling. I just don't see it, you know. But there are other, you get help. You know, I have brilliant editors and people that will look over your work. And I think for children that are dyslexic, it just feels to them that there's a whole world that isn't open to them. And actually, you have other skills and you see things in a different way to other people do. And it's really important.
Isn't it that storytelling isn't about good spelling?
Exactly.
Being an amazing storyteller is about having an incredible imagination, being able to reflect on the things that entertain you, like you just said, and then share that with other people. It's got naff all to do with spelling, really.
I wouldn't be able to pass it. You know, I don't know about adverbs and all the rest of it. You know, it's like being when you're in the music industry as well. You see lots of amazing musicians that don't necessarily know, can't read music, but they learn from listening. And, you know, you learn as you go along. You're not always the finished thing when you start off. And the more you do something, the better you get at it. So I think if children have got a real passion for something, it's so easy, especially nowadays, to see that light go out. I mean, it happens all the time, even in primary schools to secondary schools. You know, you get kids that are really enthusiastic about drawing and making things and creating. And then they go to secondary school and somewhere along the line, they're told that that's not important. And they just go, I don't want to do it anymore. That's it.
What would you say to grown-ups who say that kids shouldn't read illustrated books, that they should, you know, knuckle down and read War and Peace by the time they're 11?
I think we need creativity in every area of life and work. I heard a politician, it was quite a while ago, but I remember them hearing somebody saying about a teacher was teaching, they had a lesson on how to make a poster, and he was sort of like, oh, if my child was spending their time doing that, I'd be furious. And it made me furious because a poster and how you see information and the visual side of things, that's advertising, that's a website, that's a book cover. You know, learning how to put all those things together is so important.
I've worked for medical publishers, and not many people may know this, but in medicine and science, you have to present your information as posters. That's how you present it to other people. So that is infuriating to hear.
I heard a doctor talking about a surgeon saying that the students that they get in now, because they don't do so many crafts and things in schools, a lot of the students, they turn up, they've got no fine motor skills for sewing because they're not used to using their, you know, doing that side of it. And there are so many things that need creativity in them. And I think it's a really big problem. It's something that we're really brilliant at in this country as well. And this idea that if you're good at those subjects, that it's not important and it doesn't, you can't transfer those skills into other things. I look at what's happened now just from my drawings and doodles. And I think because of my background in working at the record label, always seeing how music was so important, and visuals and album covers, it all kind of ties in. So I've always done that right from the very beginning. My books have included, you know, lyrics and songs, and we've turned them into real songs. So all the things that I've done right from the beginning have given Tom Gates World a bigger life. And, you know, now I look at it and I think I've got books, got the TV show, you know, the booksellers. I've had printers in the UK. All the books, the Tom Gates books are printed over here. There's such a big industry that's come from just my little drawings and doodles, which I'm incredibly proud of. And I think, you know, sometimes when you get told that it's not important or it is, or it can be. And even if you just do it for fun, you know, it's a way of getting your stories out of your head and onto a piece of paper.
Not everything has to be done for any great purpose other than just entertaining yourself or entertaining someone else, right?
Yeah, exactly. It's just about enjoyment. It's about being able to sort of, you know, express yourself and watching your child pick up that book, that physical book, which is so important to them, and reading it and seeing themselves sort of reflected in it or just laughing. It's just, it's something that that's been amazing. I've never expected it to happen, but whenever I go into the supermarket and I see all my books in there, I'm always like, oh. I'm always turning them face on.
Oh, I love that you still get a bit choked up by it. That's lovely.
I really do, yeah.
Well, and thank you for doing it for our kids, because I think your books help our kids know they're not alone. Your books show them that other people get their sense of humour. And do you know what I mean?
I've been doing them now for 10 years. And I think every time I do a book, there's always this feeling that you want to make it better than the last one, or you want to try and put things in it that are exciting, because you cannot hoodwink children if they feel like they're being you know, shortchanged, you can't. If they feel like they're being shortchanged, you know, or that you're skipping or it's not as good as stuff, and they'll tell you.
It's never going to work.
So I always try and do that and put lots of extra things in. And also it's more fun for me as well.
So Liz, I'm going to end with a really highbrow question. What's for tea, Liz, and who's cooking in your grown-up house with no children?
I'm on my own. I'm actually on my own for, I've got a couple of weeks here on my own because I'm writing.
You lucky bugger. Oh, what I'd give for 2 weeks on my own in Mallorca right now.
Well, the weather is not that great here at the moment. I have to say, I've been looking at the weather in Brighton and it's all sunny and they haven't had any much rain here since November. So I feel a bit bad sort of grumbling about it because actually they really need the rain. So it'll just be me. So whatever's in the fridge, or I might even just go and get a coffee and go out somewhere.
I'm cooking pizza for 8 kids tonight. That's what I'm doing.
I've been there and I've done all those things. I've literally been the person sort of juggling. When I first started doing greeting cards and I was freelance, I didn't tell any of the people that I was working for that I was pregnant. I can remember sort of dropping bits of artwork off wearing a big puffer jacket because I thought if people knew that I was expecting a baby, they wouldn't give me any more work. So I just didn't tell anyone. And then after I'd had my son, I had to go and sort of, you know, I was still able to do little bits of, you know, greeting card work. And I had to drop some artwork off because you had to do it physically then. And I had to take my son with me in his little carry cot. So I remember turning up at this company and the receptionist was going like, whose baby's that? And I was like, it's mine. This is my son. They had no idea.
Well, I am glad the world has moved on. And on that note, have a lovely weekend, Liz.
Well, as you've heard, no one's having a better time than me.
Thank you for your time, Liz. It's been lovely to meet you.
All right. Thank you very much.
Take care.
Bye.